Hello again, everyone. This is Ron Ott with today's look at sports. Shaq and Penny and Bobby Knight and Dickie V, the sexiest man alive and the guy who directed The Exorcist. 25 years ago, they all combined, or really collided, to create the definitive college hopes scandal movie. And this is the story inside Blue Chips. Early 1980s, Fade from Black, a hopeful Hollywood screenwriter, is reading the newspaper and finds himself embroiled by the recruiting scandal sweeping college athletics. So he does what aspiring scribes do in inspiring moments like these. He writes a screenplay about it. In his story, a college basketball coach, Pete Bell, at the fictional Western University, is trying to reconcile his desire to run a clean program with his hunger to win. Bell ultimately bribes players to come to his school, and then he does battle with his demons. In real life, Ron Sheldon, a former college player himself, polished off that script and then waited and waited. Shelton, not one to sit still, would write some of the greatest sports movies ever, notably Bull Durham, which came out in 1988, before a studio finally scooped up his hoops scandal script. That film finally landed in theaters 25 years ago, and acting bona fide aside, the payout was something else. For better, Shaq and Penny, and for worse, Bob Knight and Dick Vitale, Blue Chips will be remembered for bringing together some of the biggest basketball guns of its time. I do say bitch, and I did take money, Ron Shelton, writer and producer. These programs in college sports have been addressed in popular media very much. The pressure to win, the exploitation of high school kids, it's old news now. But back then, I thought it'd be a good subject for a movie. Michelle Rapaport, who produced it, that script was in development for 12 to 13 years. People were afraid it was a commercial. Shelton, nobody was interested in anything except heroic sports movies. Rapaport, we had lots of meetings with actors and interested in playing Coach Bell, Al Pacino, Andy Garcia, Kurt Russell. And while Sheldon waited for Blue Chips to come together, he took one scream from his script and turned that into its own movie. On one scene in Blue Chips takes place in the bayou. Originally, though, it was a street corner of Compton. And I took that and said, I want to make a movie about that world. Rapaport, white men can't jump. Shelton, I wrote that in 91 in one draft and right into production. Rapaport, I remember asking an executive of Fox, which ultimately produced White Men Can't Jump, we have two basketball movies and you're going to make the white men first? They said, no, we're going to make that as the only one. So I directed White Men Can't Jump, and then suddenly everybody wanted to make Blue Chips. The script eventually landed at Paramount in the hands of a French Connection director, Willy Friedkin, himself a huge basketball fan. Casting started with Coach Bell. Nick Nolte, actor Coach Bell, said Billy Friedkin and Ron Shelton came to my house with a script. They said, go upstairs and read it right now. Shelton said, we brought pillows under our arms. We're going to sleep here. We're not leaving here until you commit. I said, no, 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 Nolte said. You guys have to leave. They came back a couple days later. Friedkin said, Nick had recently been awarded a name, the People's Sexiest Man Alive. And he was embarrassed about it. He didn't want to be considered a pretty boy. He was looking for more complex roles. I told him I'd take him to Bloomington and have him sit with Indiana coach Bobby Knight. I think that's what convinced him. Nick loved to research a role. Friedkin connected with Knight through their mutual friend Red Auerbach and persuaded him to be in the movie. Knight, it turned out, was a fan of the French Connection, and he found Shelton's script to be an accurate depiction of college basketball. Friedman says Knight confirmed everything in that script. Knight, in declining health, couldn't be reached for comment, but Nolte shadowed the coach for about 2 weeks during the 1992-93 season. Friedkin said, "I want Knight to absorb everything Bobby did, on the floor and off. His character is based on Bobby. Shelton, like any character, he's a composite. Nolte, I had my assistant shoot a video, and he edited it down to 30 minutes of Knight, his gestures, frustrations, emotions. Marquez Johnson, actor assistant coach Mel, Nick's trailer was wallpapered with notes and plays from his research." Friedkin said, "That first scene in the movie in the locker room where the coach Bell keeps storming out and then back in, that was pure Bobby Knight. He would do that." After Nolte producers had three major roles to fill, a trio of high school recruits who accept bribes to attend Western, the first part filled was that of Neon Bodu, a man from the bayou. "Shelton," I said, "the trick here, Billy, is you've got to cast a guy who can play." He said, "Why don't you get Shaquille O'Neal?" He'd just been drafted by the Magic, and he said, "You'll never get Shaquille." O'Neal said, "I was at the Four Seasons in Los Angeles. Billy Friedkin was there, and I walked in, and everybody was crazy. Billy was like, 'I'm looking for you. You've been looking for me?' He said, 'I'm Billy Friedkin.' And it was like, 'Oh, crap, you directed The Exorcist. That's me and my mom's favorite movie.'" Nolte, Billy, and I had to go down to Orlando, where we were in a hotel. Shaq and his agent came in. Shaq read the script. He said, "I want to do this film." And then his agent stepped in and said, "But we've got some problems. He can't say bitch, and his character cannot take money." And Shaq interrupted, "No, that's why I want to do it. I do say bitch, and I did take money." In the movie, Neon does drop the bitch bomb, and he does accept a Lexus, though he says he never asked for it. As for O'Neal's own past with college payoffs, he tells a little bit different story. O'Neal says, "Oh, hell no, never. I had a lot of stuff coming my way, and I was like, nope. In college, my father told me, 'You've been broke for 17 years. You can be broke for a couple of more.'" Friedkin, Shaq's confirming everything in that film, so I knew we were in the right track. This wasn't just fantasy. Next up, Butch McCrae, a guard from Chicago whose mother asked Coach Bell for a new house and a job. Kevin Benton, the assistant basketball coordinator, says, "I picked up a magazine with an article about Memphis point guard Penny Hardaway. I didn't really know who he was. Most people didn't know all the small school guys back then. And I thought, I'm going to get in touch with this guy." Hardaway said, "My agent said they were looking for real basketball players. They didn't want actors." Benton. "So Benny came out to Los Angeles, and for a whole day, I worked with Hardaway on his role of..." Hardaway had to do reading with William Friedkin at Nick Nolte at Friedkin's house. "The scene was me knocking on the coach's door. I didn't like college anymore, and I wanted to leave. And I asked, 'If I leave, will my mom lose her house and her job?' And Kevin told me, 'When you knocked on the door and he says, come in, don't go in right away. Wait for a second or third time he tells you to come in. You're supposed to be an apprehensive, afraid guy. So I waited, and they hired me right away. Dan Parada, who did extra casting, Billy thought he was the most natural actor that he'd ever met. Lastly, Rocky Rowe, a country boy from French Lick, Indiana, whose father asked Coach Bell for a new tractor. Friedkin, a lot of actors contacted me about playing Ricky. Mark Wahlberg wanted it. And I'm casting like Shaquille O'Neal. Can you play at that level? Of course he couldn't. I wasn't interested in any of these guys winning Academy Awards. I wanted authenticity. Rex Walters, an actor himself, said, I read for the part of Ricky. Did a headshot. I heard Bobby Knight wasn't going to do the movie unless one of the players got a part. Now, this is all hearsay. Matt Nover, the creator for Indians actor Ricky Rowe, I wouldn't doubt that. He never told me that, but that'd be pretty cool. Friedman, Bobby never demanded it. He suggested Nover. All you had to do was ask at Matt, this All-American basketball player, and physically, you could not do a better person for that role. Nover said, I really didn't grow up on a farm, and I had the crew cut clean Midwestern look of someone who did. Rob Ryder, basketball coordinator, we weren't really happy with Matt. Nover, I really certain wasn't. He wasn't a name player. Well, in the end of basketball, roles largely went to the basketball types. Producers cast 14 collegians who were about to be selected in the 93 NBA draft. Friedman doled out cameos to the likes of Larry Bird, Bob Cousy, Rick Pitino, Jim Boeheim, and Jerry Tarkanian. And extra parts largely went to the seasoned actors, Ed O'Neill, Married with Children, as a reporter, J.T. Walsh, A Few Good Men, as a booster, Mary McDonnell, Dances with Wolves, as Bell's ex-wife, and the final cast, an odd mix of Hollywood hoops royalty, created some memorable moments on set. O'Neill said, the first time I met Shaq, I walked into a hair makeup trailer. He was in the last chair, and they were playing a rap album of his. Up loud, I said, turn that crap off. He looked at me and said, man, I knew I was kidding, and he started laughing. Nolte, Shaq used to come to my trailer, and he would just shake the thing. I'd go to the door, and all I would see was from his trunk down to his shorts. He stood so tall. O'Neill said, Nick was an acting switch like I've never seen in my life. He'd be talking with the boys, and then as soon as he said action, he turned to a different dude. Thespianism is in its finest, and I thought, I want to be that good. Wishful thinking. Syke Cozart, an actor who's known as Slick the Fixer, me, Shaq, and a couple of others went out in Indiana one night, and they wouldn't let Shaq into this club because he wasn't 21. He goes, I'm going to remember this when we play, y'all. And that season, when he played his first games against the Pacers, he said he scored like, 35 points, had 20 rebounds. Editors note it really was 37-9 with 4 blocks. He took it out on them because they wouldn't let him in that club. Benton said, I remember Shaq saying to me the one day this jersey was going to be retired at the Forum with all those other greats. The Forum was still open at that time. I remember thinking, you must be out of your mind. A few years later, he was playing in L.A. O'Neill, I really like Duke guard Bobby Hurley. I'll tell you one funny thing about what Bobby Hurley did. We were all so jealous of him. Every night of the week, he was with another girl, better looking than the one he had the night before. Hurley, actor himself, as himself, I got to meet Ed. He was the biggest basketball guy. It was a nice time. good weekend. O'Neill, I said, I was sitting at a bar one night. Knight wanted to meet me because he liked married and with children. Apparently, I sat down near him at a table, and he was nodded to me, and I remember he was sunburned because he had been playing a lot of golf. And then one of his sessions said something about, Coach Knight hasn't forgotten more about basketball than most guys will ever know. I had a few drinks, and I said, how smart could he be? He had Larry Bird, and he let him go. And the room went deathly silent. He just looked at me and smiled, and he said, yeah, how smart could I be? The mood on the set even grew more tense once cameras started rolling, in a large part due to Friedkin's extreme directing style. What Bobby Knight was coaching, Billy Friedman was filmmaking. He directed most of those intimidation scenes. I've never been on a set more stressful than Blue Chips. J.T. Walsh and I had a walking scene, a bit of a dialogue, and J.T. didn't have that dialogue down word for word. So about take six, Billy Friedman says, damn it, J.T., haven't you heard your flippant dialogue? Jesus Christ, what the hell? You're not here just to be a good company. It worked. You get right down to into your gut when he's screaming at you. It's like he becomes the devil incarnate. Michael Mann, who directed Manhunter, asked me to play Hannibal Lecter. I thought he was crazy. He was like, no, you're very much like the way I see him. Nolte, Billy and I went nose to nose a couple of times. Once I came into the gym for a shot, and I was still eating a burrito. That really tweaked Billy. Little stuff, you know. And at one point, Friedman crossed a line. The crew was filming a scene in which Coach Bell confronts one of his players, Tony, played by Anthony C. Hall, after discovering he had shaved points. Nolte and I rehearsed that scene over and over and over with Friedkin, too. He yells action. For the first take, I'm giving him the scene exactly how we rehearsed it. And Friedman busts in, Tony, what in the world are you doing? Give me any friggin' scene. I'm wondering what he's talking about. Take two, take three, take four, take five, take six. We do exactly the same thing. And finally, on take seven, Friedman comes busting in again, screaming, Tony, what in the world are you doing? Give me my friggin' scene. Do you want to be a star? I love you. Do you trust me? I was like, yeah. But where is he going with all these questions? And then pow, 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 he slaps the living daylights out of me. I'm sitting there in shock. Nolte turns his back and says, oh, God. Nolte said it was shocking. Oh, I wanted to hit this man. But this was my first job, and I really didn't want to screw it up. My opportunity. I thought I know where I wanted to go. I wish I'd just told me. I'd say, okay, let me use this, but if that hits me again, I swear to God, I'm going to tear his flippin' dorm up. So he screams, give me that flippin' scene. And he walks out. Action. I gave him the emotional scene you see on the screen, and he was happy. O'Neill, that he has any one-take Tony, it was damn Robert De Niro. I got physical with Tony to get him focused in the moment, and then a high dramatic point in the film. Nothing was like that could happen today. You cannot physically touch an actor. Well, the first call I got that morning from Sherry Langsing, Friedman's wife, who was the head of Paramount. Hey, Tony, I heard the scene was great last night. Is everything okay? I said, yeah, I'm fine. I'm thinking of all those things he promised. You're going to be a star. And I'm thinking about suing. But as time passed, I love William Friedkin. Through all the Friedkin flaws, his cast and his crew recognized his brilliance. His finest moment may come in the day he filmed the movie Climatic Scene, Western versus Knight's fictional number one ranked Indiana team. When the director diffused a potentially disastrous situation for that game, staged a Frankfort High, 2 hours of Bloomington, thousands of locals filled the stands over 4 days to see Knight's theatrical debut. Johnson said, "I didn't see this. I heard about it. Knight was in wardrobe with Dick Vitale, who played himself in the final game, came up to me from behind and gave Bobby a bear hug. Bobby, good to see you." Vitale said he was talking to some lady upset about something. "I went, stop complaining, and I put him in a bear hug. From the back, he turns around and says, 'Oh, you're just like all the other media.' Johnson, Bobby turned around and shoved Dick, who fell into a rack of clothes or a hamper. Friedman, he threw an elbow and freaked us out." O'Neill said, "This is what I heard. Vitale jumped up on Knight's back, and Knight smacked him again. Vitale, he turned, and it looked like he pushed me, but he didn't realize it was me. I lost my balance, that's all. He's big. He's a strong guy." Johnson said Bobby was like, "I had to put up with your crap all season long. I'll be damned if I'm going to put up with it during this film." Dick was kind of hurt. Like, "Oh, Bobby, why you gotta be like this?" Vitale said, "I'm sorry," and all that jazz. Friedkin says, now Bobby was not going to come to his scenes. Shelton, Bobby was in a bad mood. One of his assistants said he'd had a bad day of golf. Friedkin says, he gave me a long story about he didn't know it was Dick. He was out of control. I don't think he could help himself. He was all that, a bad publicity about throwing a chair, kicking his son. It started to mount, and he didn't want this out there. I told him, I'll talk to everybody involved and ask them to forget it. There's more to this story, and maybe I'll finish it the next time. That's it in sports for today. I'm Ron Ott. This movie ain't about you. With Knight back on board, Friedkin could finally shoot his climatic scene. Actually, two of them, edited later to fit the script, involving a slew of stars. On Western, Shaq, Penny, and Inover. On Knight's Indiana team, Hurley, plus former Hoosier Keith Smart, Greg Graham, and Calbert Chaney. Writer, we were running a real game in real time with a real clock in front of 6,000 people or so. Dolte said, we put 17 cameras on those games. O'Neill, I think they had 25 cameras rolling. Tom Priestley, Jr., director of photography, says, no. We had five cameras. O'Neill, Bobby Hurley was on the Indiana team, and he was supposed to cover this actor coming down the court with a ball in one scene. The actor had said to me, I don't know about Hurley. This guy had played pickup games at Venice Beach, and he was thinking, Bobby, this white kid, I'm going to school this mother. So they inbound the pass to the actor, and he starts down the court, and Hurley steals the ball from him, goes down and lays it up. The actor takes it out again, and Hurley steals it again, lays it up, three times in a row. And finally, Friedman says, Bobby, let him bring the flipping ball down. Hurley really toned it down. When I usually played, says Hurley, I might throw some behind-the-back passes, some over-the-shoulder jobs. But Bobby's team played very fundamentally sound, nothing crazy, so I made sure I was as fundamental as possible. Hardaway said, I knew that when the ball came, I was going to cater to Shaq, give him everything he wanted. I passed him the ball every chance I got. Well, Chaney said, it was like they'd been playing together for years, playing off one another, pick and rolls, lobs. O'Neill said, I remember one game, all the extras thinking the movie was about them had to call a timeout. I said, the mother, whatever, that shoots, I'm going to punch him in the face. This movie ain't about you. It's about me and Penny. Which wasn't wrong. This was a summer of 1993, around the time of the NBA draft, when the Magic landed Hardaway to pair with O'Neal. Those two were set to become the next center point man supers tandem. And the way some people tell it, none of that would have happened without Blue Chips. O'Neal, I didn't know who Penny was before the movie. I was playing one day in production. I noticed he was always on my team. And finally I told somebody, man, I don't know why this dude's an actor. He can play in this league. They was like, he's going to play. He's probably going to top one of the top threes in the draft. Hardaway, we had some real basketball coaches on the staff. Pete Knoll, a Hall of Famer who passed away in 2008, was the big man's coach. I was getting Shaq the ball in such good position under the basket, and when he was running the floor, that Coach Newell was like, you need Penny in the shot, and you need him in Orlando with you, Shaq. That makes you look good. He did that on purpose. On draft night, O'Neal's Shaq used their pick, and first the draft was on Michigan's Chris Webber. After the Warriors took Hardaway at number 3, they shipped Penny and 3 later first-round picks to Orlando for Webber. Pat Williams, general manager of the Magic, we came to the conclusion that the right pick was Webber. He was paired with Shaq for 10 years. They wouldn't make a lot of free throws, but they sure as heck can score a lot of points and grab every rebound. There's a little bit more to this, which I will read next time. That's it in sports for today. I'm Ron Ott.